Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of my Thursday evening Dhamma talk from December 13th, 2018. This talk is a third of three talks on the meaning of becoming. This talk is on the Mula Sutta. This short sutta teaches the proper way to understand ordinary phenomena and is a powerful teaching on refined mindfulness. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
What? It's always a pleasure you can join. I'm glad you heard Tuesday's talk. It really was a wonderful talk, inspired by what Matt said, and this whole series on the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta is so important, and it relates to this series on becoming. I think you've noticed that.
It was outstanding, John. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. I mean, of all the Tuesday nights, I mean, it must have been one of the most outstanding evenings. I mean, I think even you said it was inspiring. So
yeah, it really was, and that was just the first half. So, and so you're getting the Saturday portion of that too. So, you'll get the second half day after tomorrow. So, let me give the talk, and then we can talk some more. This talk is a third in a series of talks on becoming, relates to the three suttas in the article that I cite on the website on the meaning of becoming. And the reason why I'm giving this now is because the Buddha's meaning of becoming is an often overlooked but completely essential central theme to his teachings, and it ties directly to recent suttas, including the one that we are talking about and reviewing on both our Saturday and Tuesday classes on the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta, where the Buddha is teaching essentially what is a self, what constitutes a person in reality. And this relates directly to dependent origination and how the Buddha teaches from ignorance of Four Noble Truths, and meaning a misunderstanding of what constitutes a self in its impermanent environment, leads to all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. And it's that misunderstanding of self that is rooted in wrong views, and that is clung to and maintained because of that very basic ignorance. In this sutta, the Mula Sutta speaks directly to that. It's a very short sutta, but there's so much included in it, and I'll comment along the way. Lay down, Bose. Gotta work. In the Mula Sutta, the Buddha asks the assembled monks and nuns a rhetorical question. Friends, if those of other sects ask, in what are all phenomena rooted? How do they come into play? What is the origination? How are they established? What is their foundation? What is their governing principle? What is their defining state? What is their heartwood? Where do they gain footing? And what is their cessation? On being asked this, what should reply? So we first should define what phenomena means, because this could be, although this sutta is not often even used or cited by people that don't really follow the Buddha's teaching, but most modern Mahayana Buddhism, and even some Theravadan or Hinayana Buddhism, teaches that somehow there's some creation story within the Buddha's teaching. In other words, he's trying to describe how all of the worlds came into being and how we came into being in a physical form. And this could be misinterpreted that way by saying he's trying to describe how all phenomena arises. But again, understood within the context of dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, it's our interaction with phenomena that causes suffering, and that suffering is rooted in ignorance. And it is that sense that the Buddha is referring to all phenomena. So again, I'll just go back to that one rhetorical question. On being asked, what should you reply? This is what you should reply. All phenomena are rooted in desire. So remember from the Loka Sutta two talks ago, where the Buddha describes how from ignorance gives rise to craving, and also dependent origination states that as its sixth principle. Craving gives rise to clinging and maintaining. Desire is another word for craving. And it's initially, and on an ongoing basis, it's craving for and clinging to wrong views of self. So in this sense, all phenomena are rooted in desire. It's our experience with simple, ordinary phenomena, and this relates directly to the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta, that what constitutes a self, what constitutes a person, are simply ordinary properties that we make extraordinary and personalized by wrong views. All phenomena are rooted in desire, meaning our experience with phenomena, with ourselves and the people and the events of our lives, because of ignorance, are rooted in desire. And as in the Loka Sutta, the Buddha said, when there's desire, there's fear. And this is really getting at the heart of the matter, and this sutta does. All phenomena come into play through attention, meaning what we're focusing on is going to determine what phenomena we interact with. And that's a very important clue in how we live our lives, pointing back to the Upada Sutta that I'll talk a little bit more on in just a few minutes, where the Buddha's teaching Ananda the importance of wise associations. In this sense, attention could be seen as desire is craving, attention is clinging. All phenomena come into play through attention, through clinging, meaning that we aren't constantly bombarded by all the phenomena that is always arising and passing away in the world we live in. We are impacted by the phenomena that we are clinging to. All phenomena have contact as their origination. It's, again, thinking about some of our recent talks, particularly on restraint, but also the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta, that it is through contact at the sixth sense base that our wrong views come into contact with the world, and so we're interpreting the world through those wrong views. All phenomena have contact as their origination. It doesn't mean that simply because I'm not in contact with Jupiter, that Jupiter doesn't exist, but in for all Dhamma respects, whether Jupiter exists or doesn't exist is irrelevant. It's what I am in contact with right now. And as far as Dhamma practice is concerned, as the Buddha taught Ananda in the Upada Sutta, whatever my Dhamma practice is going to develop has to do with what the contact that I'm engaging in with that particular aspect of Dhamma. So it needs to be pure. And then to take it outside of Dhamma practice, if my engagement with phenomena is rooted in craving, leading to clinging to wrong views, and now I'm engaging with that phenomena through contact, it's going to be interpreted by those wrong views. So another way of saying that last line in every one of these would be, the experience of phenomena has contact as their origination. The Buddha continues, all phenomena has feeling as their establishment. Meaning, and feeling in this sense is any disturbance in the mind rooted in that wrong view, seeing things clearly, leading to clinging and additional craving. let me just read that again. Just to make the point, just to say it the other way, our experience with phenomena has feeling as its establishment. In other words, going back to the metaphor before of Jupiter, Jupiter exists whether I'm thinking about it or in contact with it or not. But to establish it as part of my experience requires that process that the Buddha is describing here, and now giving rise to a reaction in my mind or a feeling of something. And as that relates to dependent origination, we know that, I'll just go through it briefly, from ignorance comes fabrications, from fabrications comes consciousness, from consciousness comes name and form, from name and form comes the sixth sense base, from the sixth sense base comes feeling, and now from feeling comes contact, and then clinging and maintaining, and etc. All phenomena have feeling as their establishment. All phenomena have concentration as their foundation, lay down boats. So this is why the Buddha. This is why the Buddha teaches that singular meditation practice of Shamatha Vipassana meditation to deepen concentration. Because the foundation, the experience of any phenomena, is rooted in concentration. Now, if that concentration is driven by craving and clinging, it will be concentrated on things that are distracting so as to further ignorance. If it is a mind that is well concentrated through the sole practice of Shamatha Vipassana meditation, then that foundation is formed for what's going to follow here. The next line in this is, all phenomena have mindfulness as their governing principle. So again, notice the progression. All phenomena has concentration for their foundation. All phenomena has mindfulness as their governing principle. So a mind that is not well concentrated or concentrated on distraction is going to have that type of mindfulness, an unrefined mindfulness, as their governing principle. And so this speaks directly to the modern applications of mindfulness that define useful and skillful mindfulness as simply holding in mind or being mindful of what's occurring. And of course, if what we're holding in mind and what's occurring in our mind is simply rooted in distraction, no matter what glorious labels we might put on them, the governing principle is this unskillful mindfulness, and that's what will govern the experience of that. In other words, mindfulness, as the Buddha teaches mindfulness, is not just to be mindful of what's on your mind, what's occurring, whether it's in meditation or off our cushion, but that's often how mindfulness is portrayed, you know, to quiet your mind and notice what's arising and passing away without that second part from the fourth foundation of mindfulness of coming back to the sensation of breathing. In other words, we're using the contents of our mind to simply further distraction. And that really is a brief but accurate description of most modern mindfulness practices, is to be mindful of what's occurring. If all we're doing is being mindful of what's occurring, and what's occurring is rooted in ignorance and distraction, the governing principle then will be more ignorance and more distraction. That's why this short sutta is so important. The Buddha continues, all phenomena have discernment, and I'll put in here, all phenomena have discernment, or a lack thereof, as their defining state. Discernment in this instance would mean right view or developing right view, or wrong view and continuing wrong view. All phenomena have right view or wrong view as their defining state. If the phenomena is framed well by the Eightfold Path, and we all know this that have developed the Eightfold Path, I know you have, Lorna, when you see things from that framework of the Eightfold Path, including the defining aspect of right view, then that is the defining state. That's how you experience what's occurring. And if what's occurring is being defined by wrong view, it can only lead to further ignorance, further distraction, and further suffering. Excuse me. And this points back directly to what we just touched on. All phenomena have mindfulness as their governing principle. If what we're holding in mind is not defined by what the Buddha teaches as refined mindfulness, and not just some clinging awareness, clinging to whatever is occurring so as to further our distraction, whether we realize it or not, the phenomena, the wrong view, is going to define that state. And again, to make the point within our practice, so we might be practicing this conceptual type of modern mindfulness that hopes to fit every aspect of mindfulness into it. And the defining state will seem like you might be getting a handle on things, but actually it's just a deeper and more profound level of wrong view or wrong discernment defining what you're experiencing it. Now, off our cushion, any type of mindfulness without the framework of the Eightfold Path is going to lead to more confusion, diluted thinking, and ongoing suffering, precisely because of this. When you take it all the way back to the beginning of this, what the Buddha's talking about here. The Buddha continues, all phenomena have release as their heart would. What a powerful sentence. Again, it could be confusing if we're lacking the context. All phenomena have release as their heart would. This could get us back to that idea that, well, all I need to do is to be mindful of phenomena, and within that phenomena, there's heart would. You have to understand the Buddha's teaching in order to apply this properly. Within all phenomena, excuse me, within all phenomena, no matter how we're experiencing the phenomena of our life, the three marks of existence, the impermanence of all things, the not self-characteristic, and the resulting suffering, those three marks, within that confused and deluded space, there lies the heartwood of the Eightfold Path. But of course, we have to take this a little bit back into this sutta. It has to be rooted in right concentration, supporting refined mindfulness, itself supporting wise discernment, or we won't recognize the heartwood within the phenomena. Another way of saying that is that the Eightfold Path is a path that meets us where we are and takes us, David brought this up Tuesday night, the Eightfold Path takes us from a place of confusion rooted in ongoing craving or desire, and using a skillful desire to awaken and giving it the framework, the proper framework, to do just that. But lacking that framework, or adapting, accommodating, or embellishing that framework in any other way is described exactly, precisely in this sutta, and why we would do that. Because it's a way of creating a experience of discernment that seems like it's wise discernment or rooted in right view, when it's simply a continuation of wrong view because of a wrong meditation practice that allows what is held in mind to be rooted in ignorance, even though it seems like we're doing something, when in fact we've just adopted something, whether it's outside of Dhamma practice and have clung to views of ourselves relating to the Dhatuvibhaga Sutta, that I'm doing what is most important is the continued self-establishing of myself as such and such, or within Dhamma practice to be in a practice that reaffirms my own wrong views in a way that doesn't, that I don't have to challenge them or even look at them. Another important line, in fact, I'll just give the last two important lines in the sutta. All phenomena gain footing in impermanence. In other words, no matter how strong or how much we're clinging to, no matter how powerful an experience is, it is rooted, it gains footing in impermanence. And you could almost say that there's no footing there, but it's the veil of ignorance that obscures the impermanence of all things. We think it's permanent, simply because of self-identification. Finally, the Buddha concludes with, all phenomena have unbinding as their cessation. Again, you could say that each and every line here is so important and so powerful. In that last line, all phenomena have unbinding as their cessation. Look at the progression again, and also look at the context of all of the Buddha's teachings, but the dependent origination. All phenomena have unbinding as their cessation. Unbinding from what? Relating to the sutta, and then relating directly back to dependent origination, unbinding from ignorance, unbinding from wrong views rooted in ignorance. Yes. And so, what the Buddha is teaching here, and throughout all of his entire Dhamma, comes back to this notion of what am I going to become? And that is determined by whether we are seeing ourselves clearly and understand what is a self, and recognizing the views that we've created that do not constitute a self, anatta. It lies at the heart of the Buddhist teaching. It lies at the heart of maintaining a well-focused Dhamma practice. We've learned recently through many of the suttas concluding this year about the foolishness of establishing ourselves in non-becoming, meaning non-physical realms, even the notion of an inner Buddha nature or inner Buddhahood, or even the notion that I'm one of the world's foremost Dhamma practitioners. Those are all establishments in non-becoming and non-physical realms. They're all distractions. As the Buddha also said that in the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta, these principles that we hold of ourselves, these properties are both internal and external, meaning wrong views, whether they're applied internally or taken to a little bit further extreme and applied externally as I am such and such, are both rooted in this body and in this mind. And if this body and this mind are confused, then we can only become further ignorant. All phenomena have unbinding as their cessation. So the clear and direct path to awakening is recognizing and abandoning wrong views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And that's a good place to conclude this series of talks on becoming. And just to reiterate something I say often, that it points directly to the potential that each moment has to either become further ignorant, if we are clinging to and maintaining those wrong views, or to become awakened if we have the courage and the direction and the framework of the Eightfold Path to become awakened. So that's the talk. So what do you think, Lorna? You could unmute your mic and tell me what you think.
Well, it's very direct. It's very short and very direct. Yeah. And when you understand the full meaning of it, it's almost it almost hurts to understand it. You can see exactly what the Buddha is meaning. There's no, your mind can't take a side shoot or anything like that. You get the meaning from each sentence,
yeah,
directly, and it's so direct it almost hurts. Actually, I read it earlier on in the day, and it almost kind of like upset me because I can see it shows you where you're going wrong. And you get frustrated that you can see where you're going wrong, but you can't flip it to the right. You know, you can't become awakened and you can't see life through right view all the time for some reason. I can't anyway.
Yeah.
And it can almost be upsetting to understand the problem and not being able to sort of fix it.
Yeah, and that points to, it points to the one thing I always say, and I know you hear it, is that's why we need to be gentle with ourselves. But I also understand how we can go from knowing what you need to do and not being able to do it right now. But it's the process of developing this profound right view. And this is a common topic too, isn't it? So even with having the Buddha as their teacher directly, it took most people a process of developing, of going from wrong view to right view. And we've noticed that some of these suttas I've been teaching lately, you can almost feel the Buddha's encouragement in them to keep doing it. In this sutta, he's saying, this is how you should teach those that don't understand. But he's also reminding them, this is how you should see this too, just as clearly. And that developing right view, within that right view, is this notion of becoming, isn't it? That in this moment, as long as I keep my eye on the prize, meaning keep my eye on What I'm doing is to develop a calm and peaceful mind to awakening to these truths. Then I will become awakened. And it is a process. So even that, even the notion of becoming points to that, to the idea that it's a process. What is most important, and please tell me that if I do this well, what is most important in becoming awakened is to know what we need to do so, and what we need to avoid to do so. And does that come through clear?
Very clear. Very clear.
Yeah.
And the first, I mean, they're all wonderful sentences, but the first one, phenomena rooted in desire, I think probably is the one to focus on the most, because if you could break that desire, you're halfway there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, and then for him to, you know, phenomena has contact as their origination.
Yeah.
You can see that also, but that follows on from phenomena rooted in desire. Everything sort of flows, is a description of the first sentence to me.
Yeah. That first sentence could be, and it might be if the Buddha found himself just teaching on the local town square, saying that all disappointing experiences have desire at their root, rather than just all phenomena, because that's the reason why things are disappointing and unsatisfactory is because we want them to be different than they are. We want more of them or less of them. And so lying at the core of that desire is a self-referential view, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which arises out of ignorance.
And also, you spoke of where there's desire, there's fear. And that's so true as well. I mean, that's the flip side of desire, is that if you don't get what you desire, you're fearful of it, something.
Yeah, or even if you get what you desire, there's an underlying fear that it's going to end or you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
Again, it's such a profound statement that most people, unless you had the context, would say is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We're taught that kind of like the game of life is about getting what you want, ultimately. And so how could there be any fear in that? Well, it's that underlying belief that that's what life is about, is getting what you want, that supports the fear, rooted in desire.
Yeah. But they're all wonderful sentences.
Yeah. I think I'm
And one of them, phenomena gains a footing in impermanence. That's so true also. You can see it, you can feel it. Well, what can we say about the Buddha? It's just, you know, so concentrated thoughts that it had, and so remarkable to sort of really put it down and relay it and give talks. And I mean, it's just incredible. But it's a very concise little sutta, very direct, very to the point.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would call it useful, because I don't think I can sort of like carry this knowledge in my mind throughout the day. Although we've often talked about learning the Dharma, you just lay a thought in your mind somewhere and hopefully in a few months' time it pops out again. You know, you don't learn it in a lot of other subjects, like you do in a lot of other subjects. It's, you kind of just lay a thought in your mind and it might go to sleep for a while. You might not be able to bring it to mind, but you know, you hear another sutta and that it sort of like then it all gels into the Dharma. So it is, although I don't think this sutta is one that I could sort of bring to mind, you know, maybe next week, but I think it's one of the key pieces of the jigsaw to understand the Dharma.
Yeah, you could take just one sentence in it, one line, like the one you just mentioned, and kind of hold that in mind, bring it to mind every now and then throughout the day, or when it relates to something, and incorporate it that way. But as we're talking, and I was thinking about this earlier today, earlier today. I might use this on Saturdays and Tuesdays talk to lead into the second part of the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta too. So you might hear it again shortly.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.